The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The following is a conversation between Joel Rose, co-founder and CEO of New Classrooms, and Denver Frederick, host of The Business of Giving on AM 970 The Answer WNYM in New York City.
We live in an era of personalization. When we go to Amazon, it has our profile, our history, and makes recommendations of what we might want to buy. Spotify knows what we've listened to and serves up new songs we almost certainly like. And the excitement in the field of health these days is around personalized medicine. So what's happening in the field of education? Well, some neat stuff like Teach to One Math. And here to tell us about it is Joel Rose, the co-founder and CEO of New Classrooms. Good evening, Joel, and welcome to The Business of Giving.
Thanks, Denver, for having me.
If you would begin by giving us a distinction between New Classrooms and Teach to One Math, and then tell us what the organization was created to do.
Sure. New Classrooms is a nonprofit organization committing to reimagine the classroom. We create totally different learning models, totally different classroom experiences. The first one we've created is called Teach to One Math, and it's effectively a program that schools across the country, public schools, district schools, charter schools, independent schools, can adopt as their core or supplemental math program.
Well, this is all around personalized learning. And at times it seems that everyone has their own definition of what that is. How would you define personalized learning?
Personalized learning is really about tailoring each student's experience to their specific strengths and needs and giving students ownership over their own learning.
Mm-hmm. You were a classroom teacher. I think it was fifth grade, if I'm right.
That's right.
Were the seeds of personalized learning approach planted then, or did they come a little bit later on?
No question. Even from my very first week on the job, I remember my principal knocked on my door, and he gave me a stack of papers that showed me the incoming test scores of the kids in my class. And there were some coming in at a third grade level, some at an eighth grade level, and everything in between. Then he gave me a set of fifth grade math textbooks, and he said, good luck. And as crazy as that sounds, that happens in schools all across the country and, frankly, around the world. We've got students who have all the unique needs and a teacher that can only teach one thing at a time.
Well, back in 2008, you were overseeing the Human Resources Department for the Department of Education here in New York City. How did you go from there, Joel, to developing this concept and what ultimately became New Classrooms?
So when I was working in HR, I took our HR team to go visit HR departments at places like IBM and GE just to see how do they actually manage people. There are great people who work for city governments. They've oftentimes they'll work there for their entire career. We had always talked about the four R's, which was recruit, retain, remediate, and in some cases, remove. But those organizations talked about five R's. And the fifth R they talked about that we never talked about was role. Are you designing jobs that are doable? And I thought a lot about my own experience as a teacher and how I'm not so sure I was set up for success given the variability in the classroom from the very first day.
How did you get this started? I think Joel Klein then was running the show.
Exactly. So a little bit later, I was visiting a friend of mine who runs an adult learning center. And when I walked in, there was a big sign in the lobby. And the sign said, choose your modality. You can learn live, you can learn online, or do sort of a blend. And I thought, wow, that's fascinating. Maybe one of the ways to sort of deal with the problem I dealt with as a teacher was have different modalities, have live teacher-led instruction, kids working collaboratively, kids working online, all in the same room, and somehow use technology to organize all that. So I got excited about this idea. At the time, I called it School of One, and I wrote it up into a big proposal document and shared it with the chancellor, and he got pretty excited by it. We raised a little bit of money, and we got it off the ground.
Mm-hmm. And he came to visit that summer, right?
Five times, actually. He brought the state commissioner. He brought the mayor. He brought Jeb Bush. Anyone who he could bring to actually show them what the power of this was. He was our biggest champion.
What made you decide to move it outside of New York City and make it a national organization?
Sure. Well, there were a couple reasons. One was we thought there would likely be a time, there would be a time when the mayor was no longer the mayor and there'd be a new mayor who'd come in who might say, this was the last guy's idea and might kill it, and I didn't know
Excellent
that I wanted
point.
To take that risk. And then the second reason, though, is we're living at a time where when you think about the power of technology and the scalability of technology, you sort of build something once, you build it right, and then it can scale. There's not like Facebook LA and Facebook New York and Facebook Miami. There's Facebook.
Yeah.
And so I thought, you know, if we could really build this once and build it right, it could impact far more kids than just those in New York City.
Yeah, and when you think about a program like this, Joel, you're always thinking about the academic design. But you found out pretty early on that operational design was every bit as important. Tell us how you altered that and made that to make this a rich experience.
Sure. So when you're really thinking about the classroom experience, there are certain elements around learning progressions and skill maps and content and assessment and all the things you'd expect to see in any classroom. But to really make this work, you also have to think about things like, where do kids put their backpacks? What if there's a substitute teacher one day? How does grading work? How does homework work? Because you can't just put the burden of all those logistics on the individual teacher to figure out for themselves. And so when we've thought about the design of Teach to One, it's not only the academic components, but it's all those logistical components that really are the difference between a good program and a great program.
Yeah. And I suspect you probably debated whether you should be making this a for-profit or a nonprofit organization when you started, and you chose the latter. Why was that the case?
Well, as I went out and talked to folks about this, a couple of things I learned. Number one, there are many venture capitalists, if not most, dare I say, that want nothing to do with the K-12 sector. There's 15,000 fragmented and sometimes resistant to change, no, not always, school districts. And there have not been a lot of success in venture-funded educational companies because of the nature of the marketplace itself. It's just not conducive to rapid scale. So while I thought we might be able to raise some money, I wasn't so sure we could actually succeed for the long haul. We always thought we needed high levels of R&D investment to get this right in a market that was probably fairly slow moving. That's the exact opposite of what a private capital capital is looking for, which is a lower upfront investment and quick to scale. So that's why we decided to go as an go nonprofit.
And your initial focus has been on middle school. And it has been on math. Why was that the sweet spot?
Sure. Well, what the national data shows is only about a third of kids are leaving elementary school ready for middle school math, and less than a third actually leaving middle school ready for high school math. So you've got kids coming into middle school with these gaps. They don't know how to multiply or fractions that are really kind of getting in the way of their being successful. And if they leave eighth grade without the predecessor skills to be successful for algebra, their chances of catching up are very, very low. So what we thought is if we could come up with a solution that could really accelerate all kids, particularly those who come in behind, and get them ready for algebra, that would be where we wanted to focus our efforts.
Mm-hmm. So let's look at this from a student perspective. Let's say I'm your typical seventh grader. How is this going to work for me on a day-in, day-out basis?
Sure. So you're a seventh grader. You go to one of the partner schools we work with, and you have reading first period in room 206. You have PE in the gym second period. Mm-hmm. Third period, you have math. And instead of walking into room 105, you walk into what's typically a large open space with lots of different stations. In some stations, kids work with teachers. In some stations, kids work with software. In some stations, kids work with one another on different kinds of projects. And above each station, there's a sign. This is Columbia University. This is NYU, whatever the case may be. And when you walk in, you look up and you see a big TV monitor that looks like what you might see at the airport. And you see your name, and you see which of those stations you're supposed to go to. So you might spend the first 30 minutes working with Mr. Smith in linear equations at NYU, the next 30 minutes working online with linear equations at Columbia, and then the last 10 minutes you take an online assessment in linear equations, and then you're off to social studies. Mm-hmm. That's your whole student experience. What we then do is we take the data from that online assessment and create a new schedule for you for tomorrow based on how you did today.
Oh, wow. That's unbelievable. How quickly will I get that schedule? Let's say I have a math class from 11 to 12 o'clock or 12:15 or whatever it may be. When would I find out where and what am I going to be doing the next day?
So the schedules are generally done by 4:30 local time. So we do about 10,000 schedules each day, all done by 4:30 local time.
Mm-hmm. How do the kids like this?
They love it. They like the mystery of what am I going to learn about today and with whom am I going to learn and where am I going to learn it. They love moving around. If you just think about how sometimes pretty boring it is to learn out of a textbook. This is a much more dynamic experience for them, and frankly, one they have a lot more ownership over. You know, they basically show that they've demonstrated they've learned a particular skill or concept, and that lets them move on. They have much more control in this environment than they did in a traditional model where the teacher is really guiding the pace and the content that the students experience.
So I can see it's just right size for them. In other words, I may not know something, but I'm going to learn it tomorrow, and this algorithm or whatever it is will indicate that I'm ready to learn that. So it won't be something beyond me, and it won't be something where my eyes will be glazed over because I already know it.
That's right. And if for some reason you don't get it after a couple sessions today, guess what? We're going to try again tomorrow in a different way. Whereas in the traditional model, if you don't get the lesson that day, the teacher may just move on, and you're going to have that gap, and that gap's going to come home to roost at some point down the road.
Do the best students like to be challenged like this? Because pretty much it's all come easy to them, and now all of a sudden you set up a model where it's getting a little tough.
That's a great point, Denver. I would say many of them do. The ones that don't like to be bored love to be challenged. But yes, there are some that say, wait, I don't understand. Math was always very easy, and suddenly it's not easy. This can't be me. And in many cases, yes, they haven't been challenged enough. And so for some kids, being challenged is exactly what they need to learn. You know, the struggle is really where the learning happens.
Yeah.
And sometimes the advanced kids haven't necessarily struggled enough.
That's right. And then you have to deal with their parents, too.
We've had that situation as well.
Okay, Joel, how does this personalized learning model, where you're really meeting kids where they are, how does that square with this longstanding regimen of having kids meet grade level standards?
Yeah, it's a real challenge, particularly when you get to middle school. So the way school is organized is when you're in sixth grade, you learn sixth grade stuff and then take a sixth grade test. Then you go to seventh grade and learn seventh grade stuff and take a seventh grade test and so on and so forth. Well, when a kid walks into seventh grade on a fifth grade level, it may not be the best thing just to give that kid seventh grade material. You have to go back and properly fill those gaps in service of getting that student ready for high school and ultimately ready for college. The tension comes in when the teacher says, well, look, our school, my evaluation is tied to the seventh grade test. So we really need to focus on the seventh grade material. When what's actually best for some kids is a mix of both grade level, pre-grade, in some cases post-grade content to really enable them to accelerate.
Yeah. Would you like to see the way we do student assessment changed?
Well, there are a number of assessments out there right now that actually do measure each growth from each kid's starting point to their ending point, and a number of schools use those kinds of assessments. We would argue those assessments are much better indicators of how students are progressing than tests that are just focused on sixth grade or seventh grade or whatever the grade level happens to be.
You know, when you talk about personalized learning, you also think of the different ways that children learn. You know, some like to be taught before they're going to do anything. Others like to dive in and then get feedback of what they've done. And, of course, there are, you know, preferable modalities for one kid in terms of the way they take in and retain information. Does this model allow for any of that?
Very much so. So there are 9 different modalities. Some of them are independent. Some of them are with teachers. Some of them are collaborative. What the algorithm is doing each day is figuring out what are the different ways that seem to be successful for each kid and preferencing those approaches, not making those exclusive. If you're a student that doesn't seem to do well learning collaboratively, for example, we still want you to have some collaborative experiences, but we're going to preference those that seem to be the most effective for you.
Speaking of the algorithm, now you've worked with thousands of students in a whole bunch of different states, and I would imagine you have millions of data points. Have you been able to utilize that data in such a way to make the system even smarter?
We're just starting to do that, absolutely. And really, our core funders have basically said to us, we want you to play the long game. Don't worry about scale so much, but let's use the data you get every day to really crack this code. And that's really been our focus. So today, every student's schedule is based on their own history and a bunch of different business rules or academic rules, we would say, in our organization. But what will ultimately be is every student's schedule won't just be based on their own history. It will be based on the thousands of kids who've been in this exact situation. And how do we use all of that intelligence, even leveraging things like machine learning, to make sure that every student is positioned for success every single day?
How are you leveraging artificial intelligence?
Well, we're just starting to sort of begin to ask these questions. So how do we sort of use the data we gather every day to really recognize the patterns, to truly understand for this student in this situation, what does the data help to tell us about what will be most effective for each student? Some of that analysis we can do on our own, but some of it requires machine learning to sort of help us to recognize what those patterns actually are.
Yeah, yeah. Where across the country is Teach to One currently being used, and how many schools are you in right now?
We're currently in 39 schools in 11 states across the country, everywhere from California to New York. We're in Oklahoma, New Mexico, Illinois, Georgia, serving just under 10,000 kids.
Mm-hmm. Have you been able to measure the impact of seeing the kind of academic gains students are making from this Teach to One?
We have, and there'll be some third-party studies coming out on that actually in the next few weeks. Each year, we're showing gains that are roughly 1.5 times the national average when we look at assessments that measure kids' starting points to their ending points, meaning if a student nationally gains 6 points, a student in Teach to One is gaining 9 points. We're also seeing even stronger gains for English language learners and students with special needs.
Fantastic. What's been the challenge to get into schools? I've talked to people on this show who said there is no greater challenge in this world than trying to get into a public education facility. But given those difficulties, is there anything that's particularly challenging of trying to get schools to adopt this model?
Well, I think there are a few barriers. The first barrier is the accountability systems, again, are based on grade level expectations,
yeah.
And our program takes a slightly different approach. The second barrier is cost. You know, schools are really organized to say, you know, I hire teachers, I buy textbooks. And this is just a different beast. And so finding ways to sort of help them find the dollars to support the adoption of early adopters is important. I think the third is oftentimes in school districts, there's not as much of a desire for dramatic change.
Yeah.
Many of the folks that are running the districts have themselves been successful in the old model of doing school, if you will. And so trying to sort of help people to understand there's a totally different way of thinking about this problem really requires identifying the early adopters that really want to go down that path.
Have you encountered any unexpected downsides to this, things that you never really thought would come up but just haven't worked the way you had hoped or maybe even have had a negative consequence?
I don't think we really foresaw the policy challenges being as much of a barrier as they have been. I think we thought naively that if we could demonstrate the kinds of gains we're demonstrating, more schools and districts would raise their hands. But frankly, many of them are saying, what I really care about is the 6th grade test or the 7th grade test or the 8th grade test because that's what the state's telling me I should care about. And the states say that's what the feds are telling me I should care about. And so that barrier has been one that has been more profound than we expected it to be.
You know, we talked a few moments ago about how students like the program, and they like it. What about the teachers?
Yes, that's actually been one of the wonderful surprises about this this experience. So when we designed Teach to One, it wasn't only to design a better experience for kids. It was to design a better experience for teachers. Teachers are effectively in Teach to One co-teaching with their colleagues. One of my colleagues likes to say, you go from teaching as neighbors to teaching as roommates. So you're no longer the 6th grade math teacher or the 7th grade math teacher. You're a math teacher. You're in the space with 4 or 5 of your colleagues. All the 6th graders come in for math, then they leave. All the 7th graders come in and then they leave. Same with 8th grade. So it really requires teachers to collaborate much more deeply than they do in the traditional model, which is a fairly isolating job. And for the vast majority, that is a much better, more fulfilling experience, sort of work with your colleagues in this way. There are some that wish they just had their four walls and shut their door and could do their thing, that's for sure. But the vast majority will say this is a much more fulfilling role for them than the traditional teaching role.
I know that you are absolutely laser focused on making this Teach to One model better and better and better. But with that being said, what are your expansion goals? And do you ever think of maybe getting beyond just math?
We would love to one day. You know, when we started new classrooms, it was designed to both start with Teach to One math, but one day look at other subjects and other grade spans. And it just can't be true that live teacher-led instruction organized out of a textbook is the best way to teach kids anything. There have to be other ways of integrating other modalities. So we'll be one day quite excited to explore what this can mean in other subjects and other grade spans. But for the time being, we really want to get math right. And then once we feel like we're pretty far down that road, we'll begin to explore that.
Let me close with this, Joel. The name of your organization is New Classrooms, and you believe that our capacity to design and implement a fundamentally different classroom is now within our grasp. What's it going to take to see that happen, not just in pockets, but across the nation?
It's really going to take a few things. Number one, it's going to take meaningful investments in R&D. That has really been the fuel for progress in nearly every other sector in our society, from telecommunications to healthcare to transportation. Fueling the design of new approaches to challenging problems is absolutely vital to this being a success. The second is is the early adopters, is finding the schools and districts that raise their hand and go, we really want to be on the cutting edge of new learning models. Sign us up. We want to basically be the ones that are setting the trend for where this country can go. And the third is going to be policy, making sure that we have the space in our political systems and in our policy environments for schools to really do things differently that are really setting the stage for the future as opposed to just reinforcing what we've done in the past.
Well, very exciting stuff. Well, Joel Rose, the co-founder and CEO of New Classrooms and Teach to One Math, I want to thank you for being here this evening. If there are teachers or parents or students out there who want to learn more about this approach, what is your website and what kind of information will they find there?
Sure. www.newclassrooms.org. You can see videos, see more detail about how the model works, skill maps and learning progressions and some of the press we've gotten, as well as a way to sort of click for more information, and we can get in touch with you if you want to learn more and to explore whether this is a fit in your community.
Well, thank you, Joe. It was a real pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you, Denver.
I'll be back with more of The Business of Giving right after this.
The Business of Giving can be heard every Sunday evening between 6 and 7 p.m. Eastern on AM 970 The Answer in New York and on iHeartRadio. You can follow us at Biz of Give on Twitter and at Facebook.com/Business of Giving.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.